This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Heart Greens. Helping to support healthy blood pressure and circulation just became hassle-free. Introducing Heart Greens, the functional food that you drink, using the same dark leafy greens recommended by both the DASH and Mediterranean diets. Get a free canister of Heart Greens with your first order and a 100% money-back guarantee. Heart Greens even guarantees you'll love the taste. Call 800-951-8940. That's 800-951-8940. Or visit IntelligentGreens.com. That's IntelligentGreens.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to tackle a subject that is near and dear to me because I recently wrote an article about biofilms. Biofilms, something we're going to talk about in this broadcast, and the role that they play in chronic infections and some ways that we can get around the thorny problem of biofilms. Also, it's appropriate because this is the time of year when people start to sneeze and suffer from sniffles and colds and flus, and this may sometimes lead to recurrent ear infections in kids, chronic sinus infections in adults, and people cascade from one infection to the other. It's difficult sometimes to break the vicious cycle. Antibiotics often are invoked, but maybe of little utility. So today we're going to talk to a couple of individuals. Dr. Lon Jones, sometimes referred to as America's favorite country doctor, and of course ours, he's author of No More Allergies, Asthma, or Sinus Problems. He's an osteopathic physician. He's currently retired. But he is one of the greatest advocates for the naturally occurring substance xylitol. And with him is his wife, Jerry Bozeman. Together, they've pioneered and have patents on the nasal use of xylitol. Jerry has long experience in education, including special ed and counseling, and is now a registered play therapist working mostly with children. And Jerry, you're also a grandma. And before the broadcast, I had a little pre-interview with you. How many grandchildren are you ministering to these days?
Well, if you count both sides of the families, we are in the 50s.
In the 50s. So there's your share of sneezes and sniffles and a potential for all kinds of mayhem when it comes to ear infections and things that plague little kids, right?
Yes. If anybody needed to develop this, it was us.
Okay. So you have your sort of living laboratory at home when it comes to...
Yes, we do.
So this is not merely theoretical knowledge. You know whereof you speak. So let's introduce the subject, Dr. Jones. How did you stumble onto this innovation? You were a general practitioner, family doctor, working in, I guess it was Texas, for many, many years. And, you know, you saw families, you saw kids, and how was it you developed this?
Well, the critical thing was my wife and her experience in teaching special ed students and realizing that they had in their past ear infections prevalently, mm-hmm. very commonly. Our granddaughter started having recurring ear infections when they put her in daycare after mom had to go back to teaching school. And she was only four or five months old when they did that, and she started getting ear infections. And by the time she was there 4 or 5 months in daycare, they started talking about putting tubes in her ears, and Jerry went a little bit ballistic and said to me, and she put it very bluntly, if you really cared about little kids, you'd find a way to prevent ear infections. And I'll let Jerry talk about why ear infections are associated with that. But the next day or so, I read an article in the British Medical Journal about people in Finland, a pediatrician infectious disease person, they're looking at the kids who were chewing the gum flavored with xylitol that they use in the schools in Finland because it prevents tooth decay. And he saw that the kids who were chewing this gum had about 40% less ear infections. So I came home and said, hey, you know, if we get some of this chewing gum, Heather will have fewer ear infections. Well, Heather was 7 months old, and she illuminated me to the fact that she can't chew gum, should swallow it and choke and die.
Right.
So I read the rest of the article online, and I decided that it works, and the people that wrote the article said it works on the bacteria that caused the ear infections, and the home for those bacteria is in the back of the nose. So why don't we put it there?
And indeed, you know, if we look at the anatomy, there's a communication between the mouth, the oral cavity, and the ears via something called the eustachian tubes. It's just simple anatomy.
Yeah, it's the tube that equalizes the pressure. It's the one that pops when we go up or down in elevation. So it's there to equalize the pressure, but it also is the only opening from the outside of the body, that is the nose, to the middle of the ear where all these infections happen. One of the biggest things that people don't understand is that ear infections don't get in to the middle ear through the ear. They get there from the back of the nose.
Mm-hmm.
So let's put it in the nose. And we did, and her ear infections went away. And I started using it in my practice and kept track of first-hand kids that I used it on. And after a year, 90% of their problems were not there. So it's a pretty good way to keep your nose clean, and keeping your nose clean means you have less ear infections and less sinus infections and less allergies and less asthma. You know, the whole thing starts in your nose. Your nose is what insect people call a nidus, a place where a nest of insects that cause all kinds of problems. Well, your nose is a nidus of bacteria that gets to the rest of your body and causes problems.
Mm-hmm.
So keep it clean.
And what's the scope of this problem? Because you actually, it's not just the suffering of the kids or the ear tubes that get put in at enormous cost. There also is a connection to special education needs.
Yeah. Why don't you explain that, Jerry?
Well, when you have continuous ear infections, your hearing is compromised. And language, as you learn it, is also compromised by the lack of hearing the sounds properly. So the reading is not as well, the speech is not as well, and children start falling behind. And they're sick all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We have meetings once a year on all special ed children. And nearly to a child, you ask, who has had medical care this year? And they've all had medical care for ear infections.
And does this have an impact on learning? Because there.
Oh yeah.
How?
Yeah,
I mean, because
you don't hear it. You don't say the words right. You can't break words up and sound them out.
Let me tell about Jerry. Jerry, my wife, Jerry. There's a doctor in Boston named Jerry Klein who helped write the book on otitis media in infants and children. It's the textbook, the go-to textbook for people wanting to learn about ear infections. And I was talking with Jerry, we were talking with Jerry Klein at dinner one time, and he said, you tell your people that this Jerry, pointing to himself, agrees with your Jerry. Because in the latest edition of that book, he talks about ear infections and the problems they cause with learning. And the primary reason for that, like Jerry said, was there's a window for optimally learning language. And it starts about 6 months of gestation, and babies become accustomed to their mother's language in utero. And when they get born, they continue that window. It closes about 2 years of age. And that's the window from when they're born to when they're about two that most kids get ear infections. And every time a kid gets an ear infection, there's fluid in that middle ear. And the middle ear is where the bones are that vibrate back and forth to carry the vibration of the eardrum to the cochlea, or the brain, where we recognize the sound. And if you have fluid in that mix, they don't hear properly. And if they don't learn those sounds during that window of development, then it's really hard to get it to them later.
Well, so,
if you can, that's what special ed is all about.
So the implication is protect your kids' ears, but also it's talk to your baby, even in utero.
Yeah.
But also, even though your baby may not be making reciprocal sounds and talking back to you, it's important for that baby to hear a lot of sounds, because that's
Amen.
When the template in the brain, all those neurological connections get hooked up. And if it doesn't happen, then your baby may have trouble processing information later.
Right.
It's very hard to make it happen later.
Yeah. And we talk about the cost of ear infections, and, you know, they cost about $3 billion a year. But, boy, if you add the cost of special ed and treating ADHD, because ADHD kids, 90% of them have had recurrent ear infections.
Well, that's an amazing statistic.
All of those problems, you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars.
That is an amazing statistic. You know, and I'm looking at some background information that you shared with me. There was an article in the May 1997 issue of Clinical Pediatrics, which is a well-respected peer-reviewed medical journal of children's care, that states that, quote, 90% of hyperactive children studied gave a history of three or more ear infections. Now, why might that be? Is it partially because of loss of hearing, or is there something else going on?
Well, it's mostly because of the loss of hearing. And maybe treating them with antibiotics does something. We don't really know what happens to our genome when in our gut when we take antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
But
there may be behavioral effects. There may be mood and behavioral effects of that, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So why don't we hear much about ways to prevent this problem?
Why don't we hear about preventing any problem?
Okay. That's actually one of the themes of this program, is why do we always shut the barn door after the horse gets out?
You know, my son Nathan, who manufactures this product, Clear, was at a meeting back east with a bunch of people from the pharmaceutical industry. And it was a corporate meeting learning how to be a better corporate manager. And one of the topics they asked briefly was, why doesn't our healthcare system look more at prevention? And the answer was that it's not in our financial interest.
Right.
Sick.
Well, before we get to the topic of xylitol as a preventive, but we have alluded to it, diet plays a role in this. And you, as someone who's treated kids in the past, you've recognized the power of diet modification in terms of reducing the incidence of ear infections and sinus congestion and so on. So what did you tell your patients?
Drink a lot of water.
Hydrate.
That's probably the best way. Stay away from the things that make your mucus thick, and stay away from the things that cause more allergic problems. But the biggest thing is more water, because water is critical to help your nose clean itself out.
Mm-hmm. Could sugar or, you know, certain foods play a role in promoting allergies or congestion?
Well, it certainly feeds the bacteria that cause the problems.
Indeed. So, specifically, how does xylitol prevent ear infections? What does it do? I mean, I did review quite a lot of scientific literature for my article in Clinical Advisor, but what's actually happening when you put xylitol in chewing gum or when you spray it into the nostrils? As in clear nasal spray, or when you use the drops, as we do with little kids. And we have a one-year-old in our family. We just celebrated his first birthday, and we make sure that he gets the drops. And, you know, he does something really interesting. He's at an age now where he imitates a lot of behavior. So when we give him the thing to snort, he knows to snort it up. So he kind of he kind of screws up his face, and he snorts it up in his voluntarily because we don't give him any sugar, so he likes the sweet taste of it. He really likes it, and then he offers it back to us, and we kind of mimic a sort of a piggy snorting sound to show him that we're doing it too. But how does it work?
Very good. Let's go back a bit, because you mentioned and I mentioned the chewing gum in Finland.
Yep.
In Finland in the late 1960s and early 1970s, some dental researchers, realizing that sugar creates tooth decay, started asking the question about what if we used another sweetener. And they took a community, Turku, T-U-R-K-U, and they divided it up into three groups. And one group got sugar, one group got xylitol, one group got fructose. And they did it for 2 years, and they changed out their diet so that every time they used a sweetener, it was one of those three. And they watched them, and they watched their tooth decay. And after 2 years, the people who were eating sugar had a whole lot of tooth decay. The people who were eating fructose had a lot less, and the people that were eating xylitol had none. And so they realized that they were onto something, and they started thinking, how can we do this? So they started putting xylitol in chewing gum. And in Finland, everybody knows about xylitol chewing gum, and kids that are in school chew it 3 times a day, and they chew it at home before they go to school. 5 times a day seems pretty optimal. If you put xylitol in your mouth 5 times a day, you'll have 80% less tooth decay than normal.
And this is part of a government-sponsored health initiative because, from what I understand, the dental hygiene of people in Finland was abysmal, and it was costing and they have socialized medicine there, it was costing the government a bundle. So they said, how can we cut our expenses in this regard? And they found that it was a cost-effective measure to provide free xylitol to the school kids in school. And,
yep.
And then the doctors would hand it out to the mothers and so on.
And they've been doing it since 1970. Hmm. It takes the rest of us a long time to learn, because xylitol isn't a drug. You can't make it as a drug because you can buy it at your local store. And if you put it in your diet and use it instead of sugar, you'll have less tooth decay. If you spray it in your nose, it'll do the same kind of thing, because what it does on your teeth, it makes the bacteria that eat the sugar in our diet so that those bacteria either go away or they stop eating xylitol and they learn at the same time not to make the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, it's a win-win, and you're talking to bacteria. Essentially, you can see it as negotiating with bacteria. And if you negotiate often enough, like 5 times a day, the bacteria will shape up.
From what I've learned, the xylitol acts in kind of a Trojan horse fashion, because it mimics sugar. It is a sugar alcohol, but it's not a sugar that feeds the bacteria. The bacteria then take it up, but somehow they're unable to utilize it, and it neutralizes them or destroys them from within. Is that a fair analogy?
It's a fair analogy, but I think it's only part of the story, because it also works at the interface. And what we're seeing now is that it works on the biofilm. And you talked about biofilm mm-hmm. earlier. You recently wrote an article. Ear infections, chronic ear infections, are generally associated with biofilm in the middle ear. And what biofilm is, and I'm not sure if your readers understand it, but what biofilm is if a bacteria can find a place to hold on to us, it starts multiplying. If it can avoid your immune system while it's multiplying, and then there's a threat, like you maybe take an antibiotic or there's another threat, it will change, and part of those bacteria in the colony will start making a matrix, essentially a house that covers the rest of the colony of bacteria. And to get the antibiotic into that biofilm and that matrix to get those other bacteria, it takes 100 times more antibiotic to get into those houses than their safe places, and that's usually toxic to the person. So how do you deal with that? Yeah, well, xylitol seems to get to how the bacteria hold on, and it's a flexible molecule. The molecule, the sugar molecule that the bacteria are holding on to, is more fixed because they need to know what it is. And so if it's in their little lock and key mechanism. And xylitol is being flexible. It can fit into that lock, and it may not be exactly what you're looking for, but it's enough to confuse the issue. And if you put it there often enough, you actually infiltrate into those areas where the lock and key are, and you replace the key that the bacteria are putting in there with the xylitol. And they can't hold on. And the whole biofilm goes away. We found that with wound care, because the problem with wounds is biofilm from a whole bunch of different bacteria. And if you put xylitol on a wound, along with something like ferritin that pulls the iron out that the bacteria need, the biofilm goes away. It just flushes off. And people at the wound care doctor that I've talked to in Lubbock that did the research, they said they go into a wound, and if they pull the gauze off that they've had to dress the wound, and it just comes off, they know that wound is going to get better, because that wound is the biofilm on that wound is just coming off that easily, and it's not going to be a problem. So those wounds get better.
Well, great, Dr. Jones and Jerry.
Interesting. I don't know if that clears up the topic, but essentially xylitol makes the bacteria sick because they eat it, but it also unhooks it.
It releases the grip of the bacteria via their adhesion mechanism, which is the biofilm. All right, we'll continue on this topic, Dr. Jones and Jerry, in part two. Our listeners know that we divide our podcast into two parts. We got more to cover in terms of practical applications of this strategy. Our subject is ear infections, dental problems, biofilms, and the application of xylitol. Clear nasal spray and the Spry Dental Defense System are products of Clear. And their website is clear.com. It's spelled X-L-E-A-R, and that's kind of clever because xylitol starts with an X, and so it's X-L-E-A-R, clear nasal spray, and clear.com.
I'll tell you about that when we come back.
Indeed. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.